Welcome to MVP Podcast, also known as Most Valuable Photography Podcast.
Welcome to Most Valuable Photography, and today we will talk about the business of photography away from behind the lens. I'm Clay.
And I'm Devon.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man, a little bit of everything. And I wish I could say, like, hey, man, not too much going on. We can, you know. But I think today I just felt like, and I've been feeling this for a while, is just sharing my story. Mm-hmm. And I find that when other people share their stories, it's valuable to me. And hopefully my story can help one, two people. It's great. But it's been kind of on my spirit to share what I've been going through since, you know, mid-March when COVID hit us and everything started to shut down, and what I had to deal with, you know, being a photographer, being a studio owner, and, you know, having a family, all that together, and trying to navigate through this whole process of what's going on and not being able to really do anything during this time. We shut down mid-March, second week in March. Everybody was told to close. Mm-hmm. And at first we were told 2 weeks, and then it became indefinite, you know? So Monday, the 22nd of June, was our day to reopen. So you figure from, let's say, March 15th to June 22nd was the shutdown for us. So, you know, almost 4 months of nothing, you know. So it's been rough. They did allow us to, for the first time, they allowed gig workers, which we would be considered gig workers and, well, not gig workers, and sole proprietors. Mm-hmm. To apply for unemployment, since, you know, sole proprietors, I don't, the way my business is set up, I'm a sole proprietor. Mm-hmm. I don't collect a check, so I don't play into unemployment. So therefore, in the past, in New Jersey, you couldn't file for unemployment. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time in history that they, that I know of, that they let you apply for unemployment. It was literally only a few bucks. you know, but it was something coming in, and I was appreciative of that. Also, a lot of the funding that was available, I came to realize, was set up to keep the economy going, so that funding mainly went to people who had employees. So if you had employees, you can get funding to help stimulate their paychecks and keep their paychecks going. So it was more of a paycheck protection program than helping other small businesses get through. Mm-hmm. The money that was available for smaller businesses, it was exactly that. It was smaller funds of money that you were able to get. So due to that, my landlord, unfortunately, was not willing to negotiate during this time. Mm-hmm. Other studio owners, their landlords basically negotiated a lower rent with the expectation that they would get back, you know, when things got back to normal, they would start paying normal rent. Mm-hmm. Only thing my landlord offered me was not to penalize me for not paying rent. So basically, whatever my lease was, my lease is, you know. So the only way that I would be able to get out of my lease is to get it rented. And I was just like, well, nobody's renting anything in the middle of COVID.
Right.
You know, it was too unsure. And I think, you know, a lot of government officials, they just basically gave up. They just like, hey, well, the numbers are low enough. Let them open up. You know, it's not like we're not at zero. You know, we're not at zero. There's still cases. People are still dying. But it was just like, you know, what are we going to do? Like, people need to make money. You know, so me along with barbershops, salons, tattoo parlors, nail shops, all those people that deal directly with people just opened up in New Jersey on Monday. So they have been shut down the same amount of time I have. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the trend that was occurring in my forecast for what business would be like actually in my studio wasn't adding up. So I let the landlord know that I wanted out of my lease. But again, the only way out is to basically to get somebody to take it over. Luckily, there was another business in a larger section of my building that couldn't afford that. I guess they can't afford that section and have to downsize. Mm-hmm. So they would be taking my space. So I was able to get out of my situation. Kind of bittersweet because they're getting a good deal because I, you know, literally built my studio. Like it was a dump, and I, from the floors to the walls to everything, like, you know, I did all the repairs. I did all the work myself with the help of my brother, brothers and a few other my friends. Like we, you know, I did everything. So, you know, it was a lot of labor that I put into the location that, you know, somebody else will benefit from. You know, I guess my thing was that at this point I need to cut my losses, you know, and that's the hardest thing I think about being a photographer and a creative and having a photography business, because you have to separate the emotion from the business.
Yeah.
And that's tough as a creative. Like, we're emotional people, and we, you know, that's what the same thing that makes us great makes it very difficult to do business. So, you know, when you're doing business, you got to do it by the numbers, right? And at the end of the day, you got to look at your numbers and they have to add up. And I find that a lot of creatives don't like to look at their numbers, you know, and they're not making money when they think they're making money. And when you break it down for the, because they love what they're doing, they're not calculating the hours that they're working.
Right.
You know, and I tell people all the time, like, a lot of you end up making less than the guy that says, hello, welcome to Walmart, you know, because you're not calculating all the hours that you're working, and you're not putting down everything that you're doing. So, for example, the person that says, hey, I'll shoot a wedding and I'm going to charge you $700, because they're looking at it as, hey, I'm going out on Saturday and I'm going to make $700. That's great, you know, and it's not really great because you're not adding the hours that, one, you're meeting with these people, you're setting up, you're getting all the information, you're doing back and forth. So those hours that you do before the wedding, plus you're also have to equate that, okay, you're going to be there the whole day. So you're doing getting ready pictures. So you're going to say, oh, I'll be there at 10 a.m. That means you're packing your car at 8 a.m., right? And then you're doing the whole day in the wedding. The wedding's not over till 11. You know, you're not getting home till 12. So you literally worked, you know, like a 14-hour day, but you're not paying yourself for a 14-hour day. Then, depending on how fast you edit, the speed of your computer, how long is it going to take you to go through all the pictures, then you can either, the time is going to take you to either meet with them again, send them all the pictures, them come back to you saying the edit isn't wrong. You go back, you re-edit pictures. You're not paying yourself for all of that. So you look at that $700, you know, but you haven't, you know, accounted for all the hours that you worked. And we haven't even included the wear and tear on your equipment. Because technically, when you're going out and you're using your own equipment, you should be charging people for the use of your equipment as if you're doing a rental. So this is how bigger photographers make their money. And this is why they can afford like a Hasselblad and top lighting gear, because they charge a rental fee for everything they use. So if they're using, you know, a $20,000 camera to do your project, they're charging you a rental fee for the $20,000 camera as if they rented it. Mm-hmm. It's just the only difference is that they own it. So I think there's a lot of things that, you know, you have to take into account when you're doing the business of photography, and not just look at it as I'm going out and shooting and I'm making money for taking pictures, but you have to put a value on your time and you still haven't paid yourself for your, you know, the hours mm-hmm. and hours and hours it took you to learn how to do what you're doing.
Yeah, true.
Right. So, you know, and when you start to break it down, it's like, oh man, I'm really only making like $8 an hour, $10 an hour. It's not money that you couldn't go and make working at the mall.
True.
You know, you're making the same you're making the same money that somebody scooping ice cream is doing, but you're doing way more work and way more specialized, and way more skill to do it.
Yeah, and you're risking a lot of your gear.
Yeah, your gear is at risk. You're putting wear and tear on your body. Mm-hmm. Like, you're working, like it's a physical workout if you've ever been, mm-hmm. you know, out on a shoot. You know, you may have to split it with somebody, mm-hmm. you know, if you need, depending on the size of it, you know, if it's a big wedding, you can't shoot it by yourself. So those type of things. So that's what was getting difficult, for me, doing the business. It was nice having a studio, but then I had to deal with, a lot of clients who were just like, hey, how much extra for you to come to me? You know, and I got that question more and more and more because for them, it's more about the convenience,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, people want to do their family pictures, but they don't want to be inconvenienced of having to come to you to do it. So they rather pay the extra, you know, for you to come to them. And then, you know, it got weird when I just started throwing out numbers that to thinking they would say no, but they said yes, right? It's like, oh yeah, it'll be X amount of dollars. And I'm like, they're never going to go for this. And like, okay, that's fine. You know, because people are just like, people will pay for convenience.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like as the Uber Eats delivery fee creeps up and creeps up, everybody mm-hmm. keeps paying it because it's just so convenient not to have to leave the house, especially during this time.
Right? Well, we all learned from Bezos, right? With Amazon, so their Prime thing kept going up and up and up. And for the convenience of it, we just kept paying it or keep paying it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think there's a lot of calculations that go into doing, having a photography business and mm-hmm. not just thinking of it as being a photographer, because the other thing you have to think about is there a market for what you're doing? You know, mm-hmm. and I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't, take into account. You know, as much as I don't really like doing events, they pay very well for a very small amount of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what they're expecting, in return is not hard to produce for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm used to doing studio porches and, you know, doing things with makeup artists and headshots where, you know, people are looking for perfection, and people that have events, they just want everybody in the picture, mm-hmm. and that's all they need.
what sort of events are we talking about here? Like
corporate events, okay. Birthday, even corporate events, birthday parties, mm-hmm. you know, but milestone parties, I would say, like, you know, 40th birthday parties, 70th birthday parties, where it's important for those people that they get a picture with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, if you can deliver a picture of everybody smiling and mm-hmm. they have a picture of them with everybody, mm-hmm. that's like the standard. But, you know, when you think about it, it's like, it's not great photography to me, right? But it's the meaning that it has to the customer.
Right.
Right. So it's, you know, and that's why I say, like, the separating having a business and being a creative, because to me, it's like, yeah, I used to frown on it. It's like, I shoot an event, whatever. It's like, but those customers bring you so many other customers compared mm-hmm. to when you do something highly specialized and it's like, oh yeah, we had a makeup artist and there was lights and there was smoke and there was, you know, fire and all this stuff. And you can make this amazing photograph and people call you because they saw their friend's daughter's sweet 16 pictures and they look so nice, you know. And it's like, or I saw
that'll
so-and-so.
Give you repeat business for sure, right?
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I saw so-and-so's Christmas pictures and they were so nice, and they're like the most basic ones, you know, that mm-hmm. you could take. But I think there's So I think when you're doing a photography business, you have to think about what's the market, because now, and I think we talked about this in other podcasts, like we're competing with cell phones, right? It's like, what can you do that the cell phone can't? And that's why a lot of people hire you from events because cell phones suck when it gets dark, right? It's hard to get a good picture. The flash is small, so it looks bad. And they're like, no, I need some good pictures. And, so that's what they're looking for. So there, I think there's still a market for people who really can appreciate the photos. So I as much as it pained me to say like, oh man, I'm gonna give up my studio because I felt like that kind of helped legitimize me as a photographer, because when you're a photographer and you don't have a studio, people think it's a hobby. So, but what I've been learning over this, thanks to you for recommending the meditation app. If they sponsor me, I'll name it. But I won't name it. But you can Google some meditation apps. No, it helped me to not preface everything by what people are going to think, right? And I think I moved a lot about, well, what are people going to think if I don't have a studio? And what I'm finding is that people don't care. I found that I'm the business. I'm what people are hiring, and wherever I am or wherever I ask them to meet me, they'll be there because they value the work that I do. And I think they value more that I show up on time and that I'm pleasant than if I have like this amazing studio, and I don't think, because I get the same reaction. Like lately I've been shooting, because everything got canceled here. So there's no graduations, there's no prom. So I've been shooting kids who missed out on all that stuff. Like I did a combination prom dress and graduation pictures over the weekend. And same reaction. And if I set up this amazing lighting setup in the studio, and I get the same response,
That's cool. What is your setup? If for us gearheads who would like to know.
Okay, so for the gearheads, I have switched to the Godox setup. So I'm currently shooting the AD200s because it's summertime, so I need the bright lights. Sorry, I need that high speed sync to balance the light.
The lights,
So that's been my go-to setup now. I've been fronting on Godox for quite some time, but I'm realizing why everybody is getting it.
It's pretty reliable.
No, it is,
And it's cheap.
and I shoot Sony, so it's only Godox and Profoto that make triggers for the for Sony. So it's been, it's been difficult, to find gear. Like I can't afford Profoto at this point, so I had to find something that could give me good quality and wasn't gonna break my pocket. So I had to switch to a Godox setup.
Yeah, I think Godox. I mean, I like the reliability and the fast recycle speeds, and it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I like it. Like I said, I fronted on it for a long time because I guess it didn't have the.
The cachet.
Yeah, I tended to think, I was waiting for people to be like, all these things have broken. I had them for a year, but now it's been quite some time and they're rocking, because it was like, what was the other one? They were the Young
The Young
Nuo,
Newell.
right? But those started breaking on everybody, so everybody jumped ship.
Young Newell was, I mean, they were all over the place. And the same thing with like what's it, cactus or whatever it was called, or cactus, or you could use cactus with like these cheaper Vivitar flashes to turn them into wireless flashes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot of underpriced. Well, it was you were paying what it was worth,
Yeah,
but
pretty
it
much.
seems like the technology and the comparisons they're doing with Profoto, which is considered top of the line,
right?
You know, they're right neck and neck. So I look at the things and then I look at the price, and going back to the business, right? How long is it going to take you to pay for this gear?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, Godox, it may be 1-2 gigs.
Yeah.
And you're done.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a whole lighting setup. And the fact that from their speed light to their top light, everything works together.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I like. That's what I'm feeling about it. I heard both sides of the story for customer service, but it's almost cheap enough to just buy another one.
Yeah.
You know, if you're paying $200 for a light and, you know, it lasts you 2 years, you might have got your money. Like, you're paying speed light money
mm-hmm.
for, you know, serious studio gear. Quality light.
Yeah.
You know, and the things that the cheaper lights usually fall short on, like color temperature accuracy and consistency, they're doing fine. And mm-hmm. they're actually doing better in some tests than Profoto.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've come over to
the Godox side.
The bright side, I guess. I mean, one of the biggest reasons I'm switching over is because Dynalite went out of business. So I was shooting with Dynalite battery powered lights, which have been great, but they're out of business. So, and they just went out of business. Like, wow. Nobody took them over. They're done. Like, they're done. Wow. So, I purchased Dynalite because their service center, was right here in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
You could basically drive there and walk in if you ever had a problem. But, the only other place that's local is, of course, Profoto.
Yeah.
You know, but Profoto is 3 to 4 times the price.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like the Profoto, is it the A1?
There's
new speed light. That's over $1,000. And the Godox version, which is pretty much just as good, is $200.
Yeah.
You know, so you're looking at something that's like 5 times more.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at the Profoto B1 and it's like 2500 or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just going to get an 8400.
Yeah, and I mean, they're nice. They're well built, but you figure how many of the Godox can you buy before you even touch the price of the Profoto one? And then the other thing is, you know, being business minded, going back to that, everything for the Profoto light costs more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Godox trigger, the top of the line one, is between $60
at the most, I think.
$80 at the 69. Most.
Yeah.
Yeah. A Profoto one is $400 and something, almost $500.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't even get all the functionality of the Godox one. Like, you're not getting any kind of LED light readout and all that stuff that you're going to get with the Godox version. So, you know, I think if you're doing business and you want to be profitable, you have to take into account your spending. I mean, you want to buy good stuff, but at the same time, you want to maximize your profits.
Yeah.
So I look at it as, can I go get Profoto? Yes. But how many gigs am I going to have to do before that pays for itself?
Yeah. You know, in the United States, if you are looking to buy Godox stuff, just buy the Flashpoint, because their warranty through Adorama is slightly better than if you were to have, because if you buy it through B&H, you have to deal with the company, and that's where the people have the problems.
Right.
But if you buy it through Flashpoint or Adorama's Flashpoint, you deal with Adorama. And the UK, I think it's Wistro. If you buy Wistro products, which is the same thing, Godox, then you deal with those companies rather than actual Godox.
Yeah, I think it's also about, you know, we're talking about doing business. You have to think about, okay, what if this breaks? Mm-hmm. What's the cost to replace it? Because, you know, you buy a B1, I think you said it's $2,400.
Yeah.
You know, if that goes down, how much is it going to cost you, or, you know, how much is it going to cost you in time and effort to replace it? Whereas a Godox one, you may be able to just, you know, run out and grab one.
Yeah.
You know, so, and the availability, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like Godox, and because it comes in different versions, somebody will have one.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so I just wanted, you know, other photographers that may be thinking of starting a studio, opening up a studio. I guess the first thing I would say is make sure that you absolutely need one.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't absolutely need one, I would say don't do it. It may be more economical and give you more flexibility if you can rent a space. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm looking at now, is maybe just being more flexible and renting a space, because if people are coming to you, they will come where you are, and it may give you more flexibility to work, you know, north and south, east and west, city to city.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you have a studio, people may be, you're kind of stuck in that geographical location.
True.
And I don't know, depending on the area that you are, if you'll have enough of a clientele clustered in one area for you to justify being in one spot. If you do, it's great, you know, but if you don't absolutely need it and just think that it'd be nice to have, I would caution you from doing it, because, and also you have to take into account, you know, knowing your numbers again, how much you want to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's, and how much you're going to pay is going to dictate usually how nice of a spot you can get. Yeah. Whereas if you're renting a spot, you can probably fix, you know, work that into your pricing and shoot at really nice locations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I even found places in New York City where I could never afford, you know, to rent a space. But I mean, never say never, but probably wouldn't see the value in renting in New York City.
Right.
That I could rent with the gear. Using their gear for as low as like $45 an hour.
Really?
So
wow.
I think some of it is just a matter of looking, and you can find it. Another option may be doing a membership.
Mm.
A lot of studios have memberships. You could pay a monthly fee, get a certain amount of hours, and then they usually give you like dirt cheap hourly rentals after that.
Oh, wow.
You know, so maybe the membership may come with 10 hours or 5 hours, and then you get dirt cheap, like $25 an hour rental after that. Then you're able to be in a major city, like centrally located, which will make you look even better,
you know,
and bring you more clientele. Because I think with photography, you may have to think of how convenient are you to people, and you may beat out a lot of other people just because you're convenient, you know?
Yeah. What sort of rates do you see for something like where you have a membership? Have you actually seen any that?
Yeah. So I've seen things like, it usually depends on how many hours they're offering you, mm-hmm. but usually it's around, I would say, $200 to $350.
Oh, wow.
And some places will do like $500 a month, but it's unlimited. So, really? Yeah, it's just a matter of searching. Another thing that I found is places that work for photographers is finding places that do rehearsals for instruments. So if it's like a piano rehearsal place, a violin rehearsal that just rents out space, usually in cities where people can't make noise in their apartments,
mm-hmm.
They're very cheap. I mean, New York City, you can find places under $20 an hour.
What?
You know, with enough space for you to shoot in. Yeah, wow. Because usually those places are associated with something else, and those spaces are usually for students or are subsidized by some arts. So they make it cheap for the arts, but they don't limit the use of the space, you know? And those places also have memberships. So you can get a membership and also, you know, get it a little cheaper if you want.
Yeah.
So for photographers, I think it's just a matter of doing some legwork.
Mm-hmm.
And finding some spaces that you can shoot, because we really just need high ceilings and some room.
Yeah.
You know, we can get busy. Yeah. So it's not like we need a lot of other things in place already. You know, so if you already have your lights, and that's the other thing with the Godox, especially with the AD200s, it makes it very mobile, very easy.
Yeah.
You know, because you have small lights, which means you can carry lighter light stands. And, you know, there's so many configurations they have from now. They kind of thought of everything. Like, you have the bracket to double the light, so you can use 280
200s
at once. So there's a lot of things that you can get into for not a lot of money, mm-hmm. and get your business going. And I think with COVID, I learned a lot, because I never even fathomed, like, not having my studio open,
mm-hmm.
you know, that not being an option. So, you know, and when you design your business totally, you know, mostly around that, you know, it was a hard hit, you know, and it was a loss. But now I'm learning that it may be better for me to just be more flexible and be willing to travel a little bit more, because, you know, when you're in different spots, you're running into different people. Your name is going further than when you're just in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're out, you're shooting in different studios, people see you in different areas. They're like, okay, because they associate you where they see you, you know. And if they know if they see you in Miami and they see you in Fort Lauderdale, they're like, oh, okay, he's in Miami, he's in Fort Lauderdale, he's probably can come to me too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those type of things. So being able to do things, having the flexibility to do things in New York and New Jersey will be great. So now I don't even have to broach that conversation of trying to coax people to come from New York to New Jersey. Because it's weird. People from New Jersey have no problem going to New York. Well, most people. But people from New York think, like, New Jersey is Canada.
Oh, my gosh.
All the way to New Jersey, it's just like, you know, they just think, like, it's super far.
Yeah.
You know, and if I stand on a hill near my house, I literally can see New York City. So it's not that far. So it's you know, but just having that flexibility and being able to be flexible with this new normal that we're getting used to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's going to be different. And I think having the flexibility to be different is going to be good for me. Like I said, I'm not saying it doesn't suck. But, you know, we were talking before we came on air. It's like, I feel like some of the problems I have, I'm still happy and still feel blessed, because I know there's people who, you know, they're not as fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not as fortunate. They don't have the options that I have. So now I have to use other options and other means, where mm-hmm. a lot of other people don't have other options.
Yeah.
You know, and their big concern is dinner.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a totally different way of looking at things. And I think my eyes are open more to being a, you know, being a photographer and providing services that my clients need, you know, mm-hmm. and not being self-serving, you know,
mm-hmm.
not looking at it as I want to make a bunch of great images so I look great, you know, but mm-hmm. rather I want to create a lot of great images for my clients so they'll be happy.
True.
You know, and it gives me a whole different perspective, you know, because I think I put my limiting beliefs on my clients, right? Mm-hmm. I try to get everybody to shoot in the studio. But now that I'm shooting outside, I'm like, oh, this is great. I can get, like, you know, I shot by the water, and it wasn't necessarily a beach. It was mm-hmm. just on the water, but mm-hmm. there was a ledge, and I had the young lady stand on the ledge. So it looks like she's standing on this beautiful, like, oceanscape.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't create that in the studio.
True.
Right? She would have never got that image in the studio without a lot of Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, what I could do in a few minutes outside may take me, you know, quite some time in the studio. So I guess it's just the second, you know, another phase of photography is learning, you know, how to shoot outside, you know, high speed sync, using TTL to move around and get different things faster, you know, all those things, dealing with bugs, sweating,
yes,
you know, all those, dealing with people walking through your set,
yeah,
all those things are just things that some people are very used to and very comfortable with, and it's something that I'm not. And then there's people who come in the studio and are just like, yeah, I don't like any of this, you know. So
yeah,
just trying to expand, and ultimately, you know, my goal as a photographer is to leave as much as I can behind, you know. So mm-hmm, you know, going outside, having those images, you know, providing images for people, and just, you know, having a portfolio that looks different, you know, and growing as a photographer,
yeah,
I think will be great. So, like I said, it sucks, like, trying to pack up all this stuff that's in the studio and find place for it in my house, and not trying to occur another bill by getting a storage unit. But mm-hmm, I think that's going to be a must, because yeah, I'm realizing, I went there yesterday, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years,
yeah,
it builds up.
I have a question. So yep, friend of the show and guest of last episode, Aaron Jean, you know, he has mm-hmm, the studio inside of his house, and he just moved again. So he has, I think he's set up again in his new place. Shooting inside of your property, inside of your own home, what is your take?
I personally don't, my home is my sanctuary. Mm-hmm. So I try to keep everything away from my house,
okay,
you know, so I would rather pay than shoot at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd like to keep my business and family separate.
Okay.
It would be super convenient, you know, to yeah, just use, cause you're already paying for the house. So, mm-hmm, yeah, it'd be super convenient, but I just don't know how comfortable I would be just having people even come into it, like a section of my house, even if you like built out the garage or something.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a recording studio in my house when I was single, but now that I have a family, mm-hmm, it's just not my thing.
Okay.
But
if you were single,
probably I would do it, because okay, I would, you know, I think if when I was single, like, my place was just where I slept. So it wasn't like my home.
Yeah.
You know, I think now I have more of a home mentality, and mm-hmm, it was just like, before I was just like, this is where I sleep.
Yeah.
You know, and just nothing's really here. It's just, you know, so, but now it's just, this is my home. I don't know if I could do that.
And also, another question, backdrops. Mm-hmm. Do you have some sort of collapsible backdrop that you
use? So now? I use the X-Drop by Westcott.
Mm-hmm.
If you look that up, it you can do, it comes in a 5x8 and I think a 5x12, which would actually sweep onto the floor.
Mm.
Those are very convenient because it folds up into a little bag and you can just carry the actual backdrop is fabric, and it comes in, you know, a bunch of color combinations.
Mm-hmm.
It's light, quick to set up pretty much anywhere. You can use it indoors or outdoors. So that's more convenient than setting up, the rolled paper.
Yeah. Yeah. I could imagine, because, you know, that's what I have is rolled paper, but, I need something for outside.
Yeah.
On the go.
Yeah. The X-Drop I would recommend.
And he says 5x7 and 5x7 and 5x12.
5x8 is like the regular, it would be a 5x8 backdrop.
Mm-hmm. And see there. It's a good price. It's like,
yeah,
70 bucks.
It's not expensive.
It's 120, 140. That's really,
yeah,
good.
And then you just buy the fabrics that you need. So you just buy the different colors, or they have some that have patterns. My suggestion, if you're looking to get a deal, wait till Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Drop is something, either the fabric's going to be on sale or the actual X-Drop will be on sale. They always put that you know, 30% off, 40% off on the Westcox website.
Oh, okay.
So,
because right now on Adorama, it's it looks like it's about 25% off.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually can get a good deal on the XDrop stuff, and it's very convenient. I actually loaned mine to my cousin. She's a college professor, and she needed a green screen to do her class, to do her classes online. So I've been using it for years. I purchased it when I lived in Georgia and didn't have a studio, so I was going place to place, and it just was very convenient. So I would definitely recommend that for the mobile setup. And like I said, the cool thing with Westcott stuff is that it usually comes in a bag, and you can just break it down, put it back in the bag, and be on the go.
Yeah.
So you can walk in with a couple of bags, and same thing I saw with the Godox, like the 8200s. That's what I like when they come kind of in little cases that even have a spot to put a belt.
Yeah,
so you can, it's great. You can just walk in. And that's my thing. It's like, you want to be, you know, you want to have neat setups and convenient setups and light setups because, you know, when you're lugging this stuff around and you're either going from gig to gig or you're getting a lot of gigs every day, the stuff will start to get heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff will start to get heavy and you don't want to start making mistakes because that's when you get a lot of wear and tear on your gear.
Yeah.
You know, and it's easier when your gear is light if you have an assistant for them to work with it, because then almost anybody can assist you if the gear is light.
Good point.
You know, when you have heavy gear, I noticed that in the studio, when the gear is heavy, only certain people can assist you because you got to be able to, you know, actually lift the stuff. So, you know, with the Godox gear, I mean, my 10-year-old, he can help me out, you know.
Nice.
So, stay the course. If you're planning to, I think, you know, with people being out of work and stuff, if you're planning to go full time and with your photography, I would say plan it out. Look at the competitors in your area and look at the market in your area. Not every area has the same market. So weddings may be big in your area. Events may be big. You know, headshots may be big. Children's photography, family stuff may be big. Look at the market and see what, if there is a market. You know, you don't want to go and try to start a business and there's no market for what you're doing. You know, if you're in the Bible Belt and you're like, I'm going to do boudoir and nobody there is trying to do boudoir photography, you know, it may be your passion. You may be very good at it, but see if there's a market for it before you say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And that would be my advice. And as far as the studio thing, my experience is, you know, see if you really, really need it. Yeah. You know, it may be a want, but see if you really, really need it. And just like we were saying with the gear, sometimes less is more, you know, so you may not need the studio and that may make your photography business grow even bigger because you're not in one space. So, you know, look at the market, look what people are asking for, look what people want, ask a few people, you know, do the research before you jump in. You know, because I feel like as creatives, we're like, hey, I'm good at this. I'm going to do this as a career. And that's great. But you have to see the business side of it, because the business is going to be the business. Like, you're not going to beat business, you know. You know, even if you're super talented, you still have to do the business. You still have to do the business aspect of it. And that's one thing I had to get used to was spending a lot of time working on my business and not as much time looking to shoot. You know, it's kind of backwards, but that's how you'll have a photography business. Like, you really got to work on the business side of it. You know, the marketing, looking at the numbers, looking at the trends, looking at what your customers ultimately want, that sort of thing. So, you know, not to discourage anybody from it, but just go into it with your eyes open, mm-hmm. you know, and knowing that, okay, these are all the things that I'm going to need. And the other thing is look into the laws in your area. Look into what you would need to even be a photographer. It's mm-hmm. not a business. If you're going to do events, you definitely need to have a legit business and mm-hmm. you definitely need to have insurance.
Yeah.
No venue, if you want to shoot weddings, no venue is going to let you in without insurance. And usually the minimum liability coverage is $1 million. It sounds mm-hmm. like a lot, won't cost you that much to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not looking at spending a lot of money per month to right. get $1 million worth of coverage. And that's going to cover, you know, when little Johnny runs up and grabs your lens with his ice cream hands and,
oh, God.
you know, messes yeah. it up, that'll cover you.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, things like that that you have to consider, like, look into what it's going to take just for you to set up a business in the state you're in, and then look at what it's going to take for you to set up a photography business and what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And just know that if you have to close your studio, it sucks.
Yeah, it does. But
But you know what? I always say, like, small setbacks for major comebacks. So watch what I do next.
Agreed. Exactly. And I think, like you said, just don't look at it more analytical and clinical rather than emotional, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to because that's going to help you in your business, you know. Take your creativity emotionally, but the business part of it, just look at the numbers, mm-hmm. you know, it just, it's going to come down to dollars and cents and that's it. And, you know, like if you're going to be in a photography business, I'm amazed at how many people don't like actually set up a business. Like they create a business name and they do mm-hmm. all this stuff, but they're really doing business as themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous,
yeah.
you know, because if you ever have a problem, you know, they're going to come after you personally.
Yeah.
And you could avoid all that just by, you know, set up an LLC, cost you $200 and a few hours on Google.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that simple. You know, but that will protect you personally from any liabilities that you run into. You know, people can sue your company, but, you know, they're not going to come after, they can't come after your house and, you know, other things you may own.
Right. Awesome. Listeners, you hear that? We give sound advice.
Yeah. We try, yes. Right? And like I said in the beginning, I just hope that, you know, my story, you know, even if it helps one person, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not, I'm not bitter and I'm not trying to discourage anybody from getting into the business. Just know that you're getting into a business just yeah. like any other business. And although people don't necessarily always respect photography as a business, it's a full-blown business.
Yes.
You know, it's an industry. Photography has, you know, people think that it's going out and it's not really, it's just been flat.
Mm-hmm.
So other industries have gone up and down over the past 10 years. Photography has been flat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which means you can get in at the lower end or you can get in at the upper end. You know, it's yeah. Where do you want to be? Because it's been flat. Like there hasn't been a trend of it going, you know, in and out. It's just been, you know, people who've been in it for years and who may be going out and you can take their position.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just been people coming in and out, in and out, in and out. You know, but the revenue that it's been generating has been the flat over the right. past 10 years, you know. So the cell phone hasn't killed it, but, you know, the cell phone has kept it flat,
mm-hmm.
you know. So since the age of digital, it's been flat.
Yeah, very true. All righty. Well, thank you for that.
Right.
Shall we wrap this puppy up?
Yeah. You can find me everywhere. Better yet, go to my website, mm-hmm. www.devonwarrenfoto.com, and you can find all my social media links right from there.
Cool beans. You can find me at cwdaily.com and everywhere online. I'm CW Daily. Thank you for checking us out. go back, listen to past episodes. Always great advice. Always great conversation. And we are always available online. You know, we have contact forms on our websites. So we look forward to chatting with you. And we look forward to you hearing us in the next episode.
Ciao till next time.
Ciao till next time. That's good advice, man. Thank you.
Probably.